I feel like if we were either like a high production radio program or a normal radio music program, or we were a high production talk radio program that was like on NPR but still wanted to seem like kind of hip and dialed in, we would open with and then talk over a segment of Push It by Salt Pepper. And then we would end the episode with some song with Pull in the hook, but I don't know any songs with Pull in the hook. Mm-hmm. So just imagine Push It bumping right now. Okay. So this is podcast Farmhouse? No, the Farmhouse Podcast, episode 2. I'm Shane Becker.
You're already recording?
Yeah.
Oh, well, shit.
That's Steve Platnick. We're going to talk about Push versus Pull. The differences when one is advantageous over the other, etc. We're going to say some wildly zealoty things. And we have a sponsor this episode. It's Peep Code. We'll talk about that more later. Push versus Pull. Go.
Right. So the big deal is that everybody's totally in love with Push right now, and that's because there are a bunch of young kids who don't know anything about what their elders tell them, and Push is stupid.
So what Steve just said is, get off my lawn, you damn kids.
Basically. I feel like with computer science, I'm usually an old man trapped in a young man's body, so sometimes not, I guess. I mean, I am a Ruby programmer, but like for the most part, I feel like a lot of us don't learn from the past, and one of the big sort of lessons that was learned in building the web was that push doesn't really scale effectively. It doesn't mean that you can't do it, it just means that it will ultimately be much more expensive and much harder to do than polling. And almost all the time, you can get away with polling instead of doing push, basically.
Okay, so let's just back up and spell out these words.
Right.
Push is P-U-S-H, and pull is P-U-L-L.
P-O-L-L.
P-O-L-L-L.
Pull.
Pull.
This is some East Coast versus West Coast accents going on here, yeah.
So you're saying the verb, like all the election prediction stuff.
Yes.
That's stupid.
That's what it is, man.
That's wrong.
It's not wrong.
Well, I mean, that might be the way it is, but that's wrong.
Okay.
If its antonym is push,
has things that are not necessarily in push as well. So like when you have an interrupt in a operating system, you know, you do a pull for interrupts. So like it's from other contexts
sure.
as well.
Okay. Why do all the whippersnappers love the push right now?
Well, the thing is that, you know, like for example, on your phone, right? You get like a text or you get some sort of message and it pops up with a push notification, as Apple, you know, has named them. So that's pretty rad and it's cool to be able to do that. So people want to have that kind of thing. Also, I think that we as programmers tend to want to model stuff as naturally as possible. Maybe naturally is the wrong word, but like if I'm a server and I want to send you some information, why wouldn't I send you some information, right? So, like, our natural tendency to model things is that, like, if I need to give you info, I should give it to you. You shouldn't ask from it for me. And so I think that also one of the other things that ties into this is that most people aren't, like, systems designers, and you need to have people that are interested in actually designing, like, systems stuff, which is a tangent we can get into in a minute, I guess. But that's sort of why everybody likes push, I think. And for my estimation, anyway, it's like, it's cool. All the cool kids are doing it. You know, this like WebSockets, right? People are all interested in this like bi-directional communication shenanigans. And modeling. It's like, it feels natural.
Okay. What? If it feels natural, what's wrong with it?
Well, the biggest issue is that you cannot take advantage of any caching whatsoever. So like, I think that the best way we should frame this discussion is around building like Twitter. So like I have some sort of system where I want to send notifications to other people, right? Like ultimately that's what Twitter is. It doesn't matter if it's 140 characters or if it's like you've got a photo on Instagram or whatever, but like a burst of, you know, some sort of update, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So if I am Asti Plavnik and I have, you know, 30 followers or whatever I have, then if I tweet something, then I need to send 30 push messages in order to update all of my clients. So that means that my server or phone or whatever needs to be able to have the horsepower to send out those all those messages, and it needs to be able to do them in a reasonable time, right? So, like, even if, let's say we are going to build a system based around pushing stuff, like, say, 10.io, because they're stupid. If you use 10.io, then, you know, you send a message from your phone needs to, like, either block until it sends all of those messages to everyone, or it needs to, like, fork a job in the background, send all those messages to people. And then you have these properties where, like, so what happens if you're not online or there's a problem reaching one of you? So, like, what if I send out 30 notifications and 20 of them succeed and 10 of them fail, right? Now I need to, like, keep track of failed push notifications and resend them. Maybe I don't. Maybe we decide that tweeting is not that, you know, it's not that big of a deal, so we just accept failure. But, like, there's this sort of, like, impossibility, right? You have, like, a one shot. Like, here you go. Hope it works. If it doesn't, I'm going to have you try. And it's a lot of work to do. So with a polling model, if I just update a list of stuff that I have and I tell you, like, yo, it's appropriate for you to fetch this information once every 3 seconds, now I can just update my stuff internally. I don't really need to worry about that. All the people that are following me, when they want updates, they can request them from me. And so, you know, okay, so there's still 30 requests going on, right? But the difference is that they're, instead of it being one to many, it's many to one. And that funneling point means that we can cache aggressively on our side, and people, you know, those 30 requests, we don't need to keep track of failures because those clients will re-poll themselves if there's some kind of failure. We don't have to think about it. You know, basically everything is just way nicer, essentially. But, like, the caching...
You can't say all that and just hand wave to way nicer.
I mean, I'm waving my hands. You can't see me, but I'm waving my hands about way nicer. But that's sort of, like, architecturally, I feel like it's a much more sound way of building systems in the vast majority of cases. There are some times when it's not appropriate and you have to send push stuff, but, like, unless you are doing one of those times where it's absolutely important... polling will usually get you to, like, where you want to go, and it's much nicer.
What are some of those examples?
So the canonical, basically, the troll example is, if you feel like using Node.js, then you probably want to be doing push. And that's,
you can't hear it either, but I'm rolling my eyes.
Yeah, that's super mega troll. But, like, basically, if you're building, like, a chat application, so DHH tweeted the other day, for example, Campfire uses poll. It's a chat app that doesn't use that. And, and he's like, we never really needed to do anything other than polling every 3 seconds to make Campfire work well, push is stupid. And, like, five people responded, like, yeah, Campfire is slow as shit, so, like, whatever. So if you need that, like, sub-second, you know, update time, if it's critical, like, maybe you're doing some sort of, like, emergency broadcast system, right? And
sure.
You want that shit to be there as fast as possible, then that makes a lot of sense. But if you can...
high-frequency trading, if you're
trying
to destroy the economy.
Absolutely. If you want to be an HFT giant banker, then, you know, pushing is fine. But I would say, if you can withstand... I would say as a rough, like, rule of thumb, if you need information... under a second, like, if it's a sub-second speed, then you need to push.
Okay.
If it's a second or less, then you can probably pull. And obviously, any sort of broad sweeping proclamation is almost always wrong. You should think about exactly what you're doing and build the architecture that's appropriate for you. And the one of the reasons why I'm being so anti-push is because everyone is so in love with it at the moment. So I feel the need to be, like, more strong in the opposite direction. But, you know, like, ultimately you should build the architecture you need for your app, not do the architecture that's cool. Because it may give you headaches because you don't know what you're doing. You're just doing cool stuff. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense to me. is it an accident or was it intentional that the web is not built on push?
So, I don't know the exact history of that specifically. I do know that, you know, things were built client-server specifically from the beginning, which means it's a pull, like, that's the way that client-server interaction works.
Was that an artifact of the sort of clients were slower and dumber and not as good?
I want to say that that's true. However, if I had been more prepared, I would have reread Weaving the Web before doing this, but I don't actually remember specifically, to be honest.
We'll put that in follow-up next time.
Yeah. I think that that was sort of an artifact of the fact that, like, you had these universities that were stores of knowledge, right? And you wanted to, like, it happened not necessarily directly at universities immediately, but, like, at CERN, right? So Tim Berners-Lee was trying to get ways for departments to be able to share information at CERN. So, like, you would naturally have your own information, and I would ask you for it. So that's kind of a natural, like, you know, when you're sharing documents, that makes sense as a poll kind of thing. Because you're not broadcasting information. You're just saying, like, I have it available, and you can access it at any time. So I think that it more comes from that that's, like, a natural way of modeling that problem, right? If I have some files that I want to share. What I do remember from Weaving the Web is that... Tim said that like giving up consistency was one of the important properties that made the web scale. So like,
what does that mean?
So some people had hypertext systems that, you know, they enforced that links would never break. You couldn't get a 404. Like the document will not accept a link to a page that does not exist. And the problem is that if you want to do that, you need a centralized linking server to handle stuff, and that does not work with something as large as the web is. So that's like one example of this kind of consistency. And so when you're trying to build the largest information system that anyone has ever built, sometimes you make interesting design decisions. And that's also one of the reasons why, you know, your app is probably no one's going to care in 6 months and your funding is going to run out and you're going to blow up, so use push. But like if you're trying to build the architecture of the web, which is like the hugest project that mankind has ever undertaken, then you have unique scaling requirements. I love that phrase.
Right. So I'm just some dude, and I'm just building this, like, nights and weekends, whatever, and I have 20 users, or I hope one day to have 1,000 users, or even hope to have 1,000,000 users. I will never be as big as the web. If I'm building a website or a web app, I will never be as big as the web.
In 2010, Google was, like, 7% of the traffic on the web, and they were the largest single entity, yes.
Right. So... why do I need to care about doing it the way the web does it if I will never be as big as the web?
Because the web is made up of all of our individual choices. So, like, when we, like, as a group, right? So, like, if my organization is as big as the web, I don't need to build it that way. But if me and all my neighbors, you know, like, if everyone builds their websites in that way, then the entire web is that way and it doesn't work, essentially. Like... you know, we all exist in an ecosystem, like everything is connected. And so, even if you're not individually as big as everything is, you are part of the thing that is big as everything is. So, you know, I think that way makes
sense. So I have to care about something greater than me.
Yes. I think that's a good point.
So your example of Twitter and followers was for 30 followers. Let's say that someone had 5,644 followers. What would happen then if it was built all on push?
So I had an argument with someone on Twitter the other day about 10.io. Yeah, I know, right? Me argue with someone on Twitter? Jeez. And we had this argument about 10, and he did not... he admitted that he didn't read the spec. He was just excited that someone was working on it. That's totally fine. However, I had read the spec. And so he was saying that I shouldn't be talking trash on them because they're trying. And I was like, well, I tried to tell them how their situation like is not scalable, and they didn't want to hear it. And we went back and forth like 15 or 20 times. He's like, yeah, but you can host it yourself, so you can pay for the extra bandwidth. It's not a big deal. And I was like, yeah, but they're making it an inefficient protocol because they're selling hosting, and they want to do that. Either that or they're dumb, and they don't understand why their design is bad. I went back and forth, and finally I was like, listen, okay, so I have whatever number Shane just said, 5,000 whatever followers. This dude had 1,000 followers. So it would have cost a couple 100,000 post requests. It was like approaching 1,000,000 post requests just to have the conversation that we were having, like two individuals in a hour span on Twitter. And that just like, that doesn't work, especially if you want individual people to like host their own whatever. Like if you're trying to do this federated situation, then, you know, it's expensive. The other cool thing about this discussion is
wait a second. Let's make the other cool thing about this discussion the cliffhanger for after the sponsor.
Okay. So the cliffhanger, so I guess I gotta like
tease it. Yeah, so the other cool thing.
The other cool thing is that this is not a dichotomy. You can actually do push and pull, kind of.
Oh my gosh. What will happen next time on
Shadow.
Alright, so yeah, we're gonna do some radio drama sponsor here. And I mentioned at the top of the hour that our first sponsor is the very smart and good-looking Jeffy McPeepcode of Peepcode. Everyone loves Peepcode. If you don't know about Peepcode, they are screencasts to teach you how to do programming and design, mostly programming stuff. They're awesome. I learned a lot of the things that I've learned in the past few years from Jeff's Peepcodes.
I bought the Intro to Backbone one, and it was great because I suck at JavaScript, for example.
Right. And in the beginning, it was very Ruby heavy, which was great for me at the time, but he's expanded considerably. There's lots of JavaScript stuff. Chef is the newness. He's started doing these play-by-plays and some more like design UX, UI stuff. And he actually sent me a little bit of like ad copy that I want to read because it sort of tells the story of one of their products that we want to focus on today. So I love Peepcode. I can't say enough nice things about it as a product or as a company or a brand or, Jeff and the people that work with him. They are all very fine human beings. Okay, so Peepcode's design bundle gives you a discount on 5 videos. You get video of 5 live sessions with Ryan Singer of 37 Signals, Kyle Neath of GitHub, and Nevin Morgan? Mergen.
I'm not 100% sure.
I think it's Mergen. So Nevin Mergen of Panic Software. These are top designers, some of whose own coworkers have never watched them work through a project from start to finish. Both developers and designers can learn from how they think through problems and design beautiful solutions to real problems. And then we've got a URL here. So the Peepcode site is Peepcode, PEEPCODE.com. And this particular product that we're trying to highlight for Jeff today is peepcode.com/products/design-bundle. And what's cool about the design bundle is you get two, these are all the play-by-plays. So that's actually like Jeff sitting there for an hour or two or three next to someone recording their screen and talking through their workflow and their tools and whatever. So you get two with Ryan Singer. One is all about sketching. One is about prototyping in the browser, HTML, CSS prototyping. The Kyle Neath one is about enhancing an application, and the Nevin Mergen one is about mobile UI design. Those three are some of my favorite designers. You should definitely go do this. But the cool thing about this bundle is it's $48, which is the cost of those four screencasts. They're $12 each. But when you buy this bundle, you get an extra credit for free to spend on whatever video you want now or later. So that's Peepcode. Thank you so much, Peepcode, for sponsoring our second episode, being our first sponsor. Everyone, go check it out. Peepcode is awesome.
Give Jeff your money.
Yeah, give Jeff your money. No, seriously, it is the best $12 or $48 you will spend.
And if you're a programmer, you should be charging enough that that's a trivial amount of money.
Right.
Anyway, especially if you're in the Ruby or JavaScript or design world right now, because it's an awesome job market.
Yeah. So you can do push and pull at the same time. You're blowing my mind, Steve.
Yeah.
I don't believe you.
So Google, who is kind of scary, but whatever, has a lot of bright people working for them. They thought about this problem, and they're like, push sucks because, you have this issue with, like, I need to send 1 million updates if I have 1 million followers. Polling kind of sucks because you need to have this caching infrastructure and, you know, et cetera. So they did this really cool thing, and they made this protocol called PubSub Hubub, which is kind of fun to say. It's hard to say at first. It's cool because it also abbreviates as capital P, lowercase u, capital S, capital H. So you get push, pub, sub, hubbub. But basically what it does is it combines the two into one thing. And so it's just an architectural design. You don't have to use any Google code to use it. But they're the ones I know that at least that made this popular. It might have been designed by somebody else first. I'm not 100% sure of the history. But effectively what happens is you delegate to this hub. Like, it sends an intermediary. So, like, you know, I follow Shane on R status, for example. So the O status protocol uses PubSub Hubub. So, like, if I follow Shane, Shane has a hub somewhere that's this big, beefy server. And so when I say, hey, Shane, I'd like to follow you, he says, cool, ask my hub for updates. And so it points me over at the hub. So I send a request to the hub, and I say, hey, hub, I would like to subscribe to updates. Here is a URL that you can ping me at with any push notifications you'd like to send. And I'd like to know where the feed is located if I want to pull. And it says, awesome, you're registered up for push stuff, and here's the feed location to get Shane's updates. And then that's cool. So what happens is then... when Shane sends out a message, he actually sends a message to his hub and says, yo, I have this new status update. So the hub updates the feed, and the hub also sends the push notification to everyone who is subscribed to that hub. Now, what's nice about this is we can share hubs. So instead of like my phone needing to be important and big enough to handle pushing, you know, a ton of updates, I can have a hub and Shane can have a hub, and those hubs can be the same one. And so, like, my phone only needs to send one update to the hub, and then the hub can handle doing all the 30 ones. It's also nice because that failure mode doesn't happen. So, like, if the push fails, then it just doesn't worry about it because you can always re-pull the feed to get information. You can pull it as often as you'd like, or, you know, the server will tell you how long that's appropriate. So you get sort of, like, the best of both worlds in that sense. You can send these high-frequency updates, and you can not worry about... you know, like your client needing to be on a super powerful computer, and you don't need to worry if there's, you know, some failure modes, it'll be all right. So what's cool is Google runs a big public hub that you can use for free. So they just pay a ton of money for a big giant server. There's also a company called Superfeeder that sells like hosted hubs. So you can sign up. I think they have a freemium plan or whatever, but like you can also use that, or you can just run your own. Like I said, it's a protocol, not a product. So there's nothing proprietary about this idea, but that means you can sort of like, yeah, get both sides of it. And if you don't want to send push notifications, you never have to either. You know, you can say like, I would like to know the feed location and don't give them a call back and never receive pushes. And so, you know, it's also nice because since it's built on top of like our Atom and RSS, it plays well with existing standards. So like this whole serendipitous reuse thing that we were talking about previously, because Google plays well with existing standards, if I have a regular RSS reader, I can just follow the 3 or 4 redirect to the feed on the hub and use my regular Atom or RSS reader to read that feed and not need to know about PubSub Hubub, the protocol specifically.
When you said, I think you maybe just missed it. You said, because Google plays well, did you mean because PubSub Hubub plays well?
Yeah, so like when Google made PubSub Hubub, instead of totally reinventing the wheel, they decided, let's take Atom and annotate it with this push stuff. So they like built on top of the existing stuff, which is kind of what we're going for, you know, in our last episode about using HTML, so that way, you know, you get this serendipitous reuse idea. So any regular feed reader can read PubSub Hubub feeds, but if you have additional capabilities, then you can take advantage of the additional capabilities that the protocol offers. And that's a really nice way of designing this sort of thing, is by layering these standards on top of each other. So O status, the standard I was talking about before, is a microblogging protocol that basically is layered on top of PubSub Hubub, which is layered on top of Atom. So you get this nice effect where if you have a basic feed reader, you can still participate in reading people's updates. You just get the most basic stuff. If you have PubSub Hubub, you could follow that in any client that supports that. But if you have an OStatus-enabled client, you get the extra features about microblogging specifically, which are kind of cool. So this sort of idea means you get this broad range of interactions, and you don't need to totally make everything up every time. You can build on top of the work that other people have done, and you know, all the existing PubSub Hubbub reader code can be used. You know, all the Atom feed reader code can be used. You don't need to write a brand new parser for a brand new format and all that kind of stuff. You take advantage of all that tooling that exists when you layer your design on top of other people's work rather than reinventing it because it's fun and you're bored and you don't know what you're doing.
What do you really think?
Yeah, what...
That's dangerous territory.
That's true.
How do you know about all this O status stuff?
So,
and PubSub Hubbub stuff?
So this is, again, me being a crotchety old man. So like this app.net and 10.io shenanigans, right? Everybody got mad because Twitter are jerks. And that's totally awesome. I fully support being mad about Twitter being jerks because they're jerks. And you should tell them they're jerks. So I went through this exact same phase a year ago where I got mad at Twitter being jerks. And me and my friends said, you know what? We're programmers. We're better than this. Let's write a good, you know, alternative open Twitter. So the very first thing that we did was see what was already out there. Like our first inclination was like, let's figure this out. And so when we poked around the internet, we ran into, of course, Identica and status.net, right? Because those are already existing open alternatives to Twitter. So we first decided, like, do we really want to use Identica? So I didn't even think about writing code at first. I actually signed up for an Identica account. And then I realized that it was kind of crappy looking, and I've been spoiled by Twitter Bootstrap, and I like websites to be nice, although Twitter Bootstrap didn't exist when I made that project. But, like, you know, Ruby in general has spoiled me about nice interfaces, so I thought Identica sort of looked like Slashdot, which, you know, I love, but it's from that earlier internet era. And it was also written in PHP, so I knew that I didn't actually want to hack it. So we looked at how they built it, and they used this open standard called OStatus. So we thought, oh, cool, we could build our own OStatus compatible site, write it in Ruby, and that way Ruby hackers can enjoy working on it if they want, and we can play nicely with this existing ecosystem, and you know, if you like Identica's design better, you could totally sign up for Identica and follow people on our site. And if you like our design better, or you like using Ruby and you want to write your own custom client, you could use our code and follow their stuff better. So it's because we did that, we had this idea to like look at what was out there before we decided to rebuild from scratch, basically. And just Googling around, and that's it. So
that's one of the sort of selling points or whatever of OStatus is that... Shane on OStatus server X can follow and communicate with Steve on OStatus server Y.
Right. And whenever I follow you, so like, say you're Shane at Identica and I'm Steve at RStatus. So I can click a box and say, follow, Vegan Straight Edge at Identica, and your feeds will automatically appear in my stream on RStatus and vice versa. When you go to Identica and you follow me,
right,
you can get your feeds on your site, you know, and the permalink will actually link to the other site. You know, like there's the, mm-hmm. Now Twitter hides it in their interface, like six layers deep. But if you click like expand and then details and then like permalink, you get that permalink.
Mm-hmm.
So it actually points to the other site because that is the real permalink for the status update. But they know how to communicate with each other so that it's transparent to you as the user.
So there's Identica, there's status.net, and now RStatus.
Right.
Are there other microblogging sites that are built on OStatus that can talk with each other?
So what's interesting about OStatus is it's not specific to microblogging. It's just about updates. So it also builds on activity streams. So any of the activity stream stuff can work. So, like, Diaspora used OStatus to communicate between their nodes. So you could actually, like, you could actually follow someone on Diaspora from RStatus, and you would get just their text updates. You wouldn't get their, like, photos or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But because they speak that same general protocol, you could follow them in that way. And so since it's just generic messaging, like, you know, statuses, it's not solely microblogging stuff. Those are the major implementations that I know of. Are those like StatusNet, Identica, which are the same thing sort of, and Diaspora and us, RStatus.
Okay, so I think that's a good stopping place. We've been about a half hour.
Totally.
We started with push and pull, end up with diaspora.
Right. Which is you know, kind of like, do I really want to? And do I really advocate? Like, a diaspora does this. You should do this. But ultimately, I guess the big point is, don't do what's cool. Analyze your architecture and figure out what you should actually be building. And consider polling before pushing, because it's possibly what you want instead.
Don't do what's cool just because it's cool.
Right. It may be cool for a good reason, and you may have the
same
reasons.
It's illegal to kill people. But that's also sometimes a good idea, to not kill people. Right? Just because something's a law doesn't mean it's wrong. Just, you shouldn't not do it just because it's a law.
Right, you shouldn't do it because it's a good thing not to do.
Right. A neutral good.
There's too many positives and negatives in this sentence.
We took a test today, and I learned that I'm neutral good in D&D.
Awesome. Sounds about where I was, I think, too.
All right.